WHBC Garden City, New York, the voice of Nassau Community College.
Listen. Join WHBC's Daily News Wrap-Up, weekdays at 4:30 p.m., bringing you a complete report of the day's news, home and abroad, as well as sports, weather, and many other informative features.
We're Long Island's FM alternative.
Friday, 5 p.m.
Didn't think it was ever going to come
this week. I say that a lot lately.
These weeks are getting harder and harder.
Maybe.
Well, it is a beautiful summer. Today was a bit of a rough day in the morning, but it's gorgeous now, so I shouldn't have anything to complain about. And it is Friday, 5 o'clock, the happiest of happy hours.
Glad to have you
all aboard for the next hour while we do the Friday edition of American Hit Radio. Change the title around a little bit. We call it How Music Changed. Not to confuse you, but it's because we have a variety of topics that we cover in depth on Friday. The subject that we've been looking at for the past 3 or 4 months now has been Stax Records out of Memphis, Tennessee. We've been looking at the better part of their history with to some degree of depth. I guess we've been doing this since the beginning of summer, maybe since around May or June.
It's been our summer project.
Well, this is show number 17 in that series. Starting at the very beginning of the label, we are now at about mid-year of 1970. And to a casual observer, if you were just like a regular music fan and just, you know, checking out stuff that was happening on the radio and everything, it seemed that things at Stax were appearing to be moving along pretty much as the same as ever. I mean, of course, they lost their major artists. Otis Redding, of course, gone in the plane crash. Sam and Dave, now pretty much gone for good. Because although they were the major artists for Stax, when Atlantic Records pulled them, they didn't have any other hits. They were incapable of having other hits because they were now literally like cloven away from their songwriting team. The Hayes Porter team was no longer helping
off
them.
Off limits.
So there was no more material for Sam and Dave. So now they're suffering. In the meantime, they're like, you know, the label Stax is still releasing music at a steady clip. After that huge push for them trying to do the rebirth, they had a ton of material. And the label still enjoyed its share of hits. But if you really began to look a little bit beneath the veneer, you could see that things really weren't as they used to be by 1970. Besides the fact that the major artists were taken away, the MGs even, the musicians who were the very glue that held things together at that label throughout the 60s, they were now abandoning the ship. They were like basically jumping overboard like rats on a sinking ship.
What's the saying? The blush is off the bloom or something like that?
Yeah, bloom is off the rose.
There you go.
The upper management, like Estelle Axton, saw the writing on the wall, and she left. Also, the songs kept coming out, but most of them lacked that contemporary magic and the signature sound that defined the original Stax.
That's true.
Hits of the mid to late 60s. I mean, the songs were good, but they weren't really good enough to make a lasting impact. They were good for their time, but a lot of the stuff from around this era, we tend to not remember so much, or we tend to not associate it with Stax. So the label needed to change with the changing times, but the question remained as to whether they could remain relevant. And that's exactly where they are at this point in time. One of the biggest problems they had was trying to maintain hits for their signature artists, the people who had been with them from the very beginning. One being Carla Thomas, who had an excellent song that she had released around this time. And it was one of the first songs. She even got Donny Hathaway to produce it for her. He's the co-writer on the song, and he did a great job.
Impressive.
This song didn't chart at all, not even on the R&B charts. It went nowhere. It may as well have not been released.
A lead balloon.
This is sort of like really the beginning of the real end for Carla Thomas, because she hadn't had a hit since the last recording that she did with Otis Redding. That was 3 years ago.
Wow.
So in pop music parlance, it's over, baby. And I think she kind of knew it, too. They were trying to do all sorts of different things with her, different producers, different writers, different studios. And really, the only problem with what that really meant is that there was really no consistency anymore, and nobody felt as though she was their baby. Nobody was really taking care of Carla. But Donny Hathaway certainly tried. Check out this track. It's called Never Be True.
I did what I could for you, baby. I did it on the QT. You accepted what I did and made a, well, you know, out of me. You made love to me, baby, when you wanted something for yourself. Then you turned around and gave my loving to somebody else. And can I get you to help me?
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
Ooh,
you socked it to me.
Ooh,
ooh, really laid it on me, baby. Yeah, you really had your fun. Mm-hmm. I wanna sing for you now. You know that I could really love you. Yeah, yeah. And you know I would be faithful. And I would always be true. You know I'd never do you wrong. Cause I tell you that I loved you, baby, all the day long. But still you make me feel like my love is just in vain. Hon, I just don't understand why you make love again. Never be true to me. Never, oh, never
be true.
Be true. Oh, there was a time when we had so much fun together. Yeah. True to me, never. Oh, you just can't
be true.
Oh, no. Oh. True to me,
never.
You just can't
be true.
Be true.
Oh, never.
You never
be
will.
True.
After all I've done for you, baby,
never.
You're just never gonna
be true.
Oh, I give you all of my loving,
never.
But you just can't
be true.
You never, never, never,
never.
You'll never be. True to me,
never.
Oh, why, baby? Why can't you be true?
Never,
never
be true
to me.
Carla Thomas literally fades into the background. So does her career around this point in time, unfortunately. It's so sad because she was so important to the label.
Great voice.
And, of course, it looked like the label, yeah, and a tremendous amount of potential. At one point in time, it seemed as though they were going to set her up to be the Memphis version of a Diana Ross.
I could see that.
And yeah, and I think that she really wanted to see it happen and put in as much energy as she could to it. But after Otis passed away and then the whole debacle with Atlantic Records, it was harder for her to find a regular, steady team to support her. Mm. Like the MGs were gone now. The production teams were gone and splintering too. So she still came up with some good material. Like that song, I think that in 1970, excellent, that fit in really perfectly with the times.
Especially in the South.
You would think. But I'll bet that that's the first time that almost anybody who had just heard the song did ever hear the song. It just never really got out there anywhere. Mavis Staples, the other one. Of course, the Staples singers were always good for at least an R&B hit.
Mm-hmm.
And the label was trying to push them on three different levels, trying to see if they could get the Staple singers, of course, to kick it up a notch and maybe get on the pop charts. That wasn't happening yet, not at this point, not by 1970. But they were releasing singles with pop Staples, which, by the way, were fantastic. I think we played some last week.
Yeah, we did.
And they were excellent. And Mavis as well. But the thing that was weird, I think, that they did with Mavis that might have been a little bit weird to me anyway, is that they were giving her material that didn't really suit the style that she had with the Staple singers. The Staples had that R&B protest gospel thing where it was all rolled up in a really beautiful bundle. Mm-hmm. And you could really tell what they were, that it was them almost by the message of the song. But with Mavis and her solo career, they were actually giving her love songs.
Right. They were trying to make her more of the sex symbol.
Or at least the spurned woman sort of a thing.
Right.
You know, it was almost like that. And it didn't always work. Well, this track, it turned out, was written by one of the house songwriters, J.J. Barnes, and he had actually recorded the song complete. And it was decided that they would just erase his vocal and put Mavis's on top and see what would happen. She ended up with a reasonable hit, went to number 13 on the R&B charts. So that says something. Here's Mavis Staples with I Have Learned to Do Without You.
You gave me my first taste of love. You put me in a groove, and all I could think of were your sweet lips upon my face. Your tender voice, I thought I could never erase. Although you've gone, and I'm all alone, in an unhappy home, I have learned to do without you. Even though it hurts me deep down inside, I have learned to do without you. I have wiped those tears from my eyes. I'm not perfect, boy, and I know it's true. But all my intentions were good for you. My true love and affection, it just wouldn't do. So you found yourself, found somebody new. Now that you're gone, and I'm all alone, in an happy home. Do without you.
from my eyes. Now that you've had your rendezvous, you realize just how good I was to you. You've come back to my front door, but it's too late, it's too late, it's too late. I just don't need you no more. So baby, go on, go on and leave me alone.
What do you think of that?
I think they were trying to give Gladys Knight a good run for her money.
I never thought of that, but I think you're exactly right. That sounds almost exactly like a Gladys Knight song, doesn't it?
Mm.
Good for you. And of course, Mavis handles it brilliantly. I mean,
oh my God, as she pour some emotion into that one.
Right. You know, as the saying goes, she could probably sing a phone book and you'd want to hear it.
Don't stop.
But that was obviously somewhat better than a phone book. But I mean, when the Staples really started to fire on all cylinders, they were sort of an unstoppable group. And I think that they knew at this point that they did remain one of their secret weapons that maybe could help them pull things out of this artistic rut that the label is beginning to. Maybe I don't even know if they were aware of it. To be honest, because everything that I'm reading about how the label was feeling at this time, they were almost like overly confident. They were making so much money off of Isaac Hayes and what he had done. I mean, that first album that he had put out that we discussed a few shows ago, and he put out Hot Buttered Soul.
Oh, yeah.
It just more or less changed the face of soul music. And he became the single most famous rhythm and blues artist in the world on the heels of that. And subsequent albums came out. So there was a lot happening there. So the labels just really was kind of feeling cocky, thinking that that's really almost all that they needed. While a lot of the other artists were kind of beginning to flounder in their wake. We played this next act coming up. They're called the TSU Toronados. We played one track by them also a few shows back. The TSU Toronados, actually, that's the Texas Southern University Toronados. It's essentially like a frat band. Full of horns and everything else. They sort of like filled in the space that was left by the Barquets back in the day, sort of doing that sort of thing with crowd sounds and everything. The track that we played before was called My Thing Is a Moving Thing. I don't know why that title cracks me up, but it does. This, though, is a little bit more self-referential, just straight to the point, frat rock in an R&B sort of a way. I guess it's in a Texas Southern sort of a way. Here's Play the Music, Toronados.
Play the music all night.
inspired somewhat by the Barquets and Soul Finger. And as you just said, Heidi, again, that Serge Gainsbourg was doing stuff like that too, but in right. obviously in a very different,
right, but
sexier
there's still,
way.
But I mean, she's got that little sexy vibe.
Yeah,
in that
yeah, definitely.
Number.
The TSU Toronados. You know, throughout the show, I usually do a little bit of reading. I don't have very much to read today because the book will pick up, I guess, we're going to be picking up the show next week. But I've got one excerpt. The book that I read from throughout this series from time to time, it's called Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion, a really great book about the label by Robert Gordon. If you're interested in the songs in the show and the series, the way that I'm covering it, you'd be getting a heck of a lot more information, actually, from the entire book. I just, of course, am reading short excerpts. Here's one of them. Isaac Hayes shot to fame like an express elevator to the penthouse floor. He released two albums in 1970, The Isaac Hayes Movement and To Be Continued, each built almost exactly like Hot Buttered Soul. Two songs on each side, with Ike's extended, intimate raps gliding listeners into his velvety world. Both of them raced up the charts. The Isaac Hayes Movement came out in March and spent 6 weeks at the number one spot on the soul chart. It stayed on the chart nearly the whole rest of the year, falling off just in time for the December release of To Be Continued, which ran to the top. Movement spent a year and a half on the Billboard 200 album chart and featured a version of the Jerry Butler song I Stand Accused as its single, which proved popular among both soul and pop audiences. The album art finds Isaac relishing his newfound star status. The cover opens to reveal a vertical centerfold of Isaac, shirtless, hello, wearing thick gold chains around his neck and waist. His arms are forward and down as if he's lifting something or someone. The lighting is dramatic. He's wearing dark shades, and it's all so super cool that it trumps the back cover shot of him seated, draped in a matching multi-layered zebra-striped outfit with a high collar and zebra cap.
Crazy.
This, though, might be a high point in his career as a vocalist. His version of I Stand Accused.
Stand accused of loving you too much, and I hope it's not a crime, 'cause if it is, I'm guilty. Loving you, oh yeah. I will.
'cause I just can't. I can't help myself. I'm a victim of circumstance and just one. One touch of your hand, I don't know how it happened, but just look at me. I find myself trembling on the witness stand, and I'm shouting out all over the land. Everybody's guilty. I'm guilty of loving you. I'm guilty of loving you, yeah. I said I'm guilty. But what can I do? I wanna hold you. I wanna squeeze you tight. But when myself, she belongs to another.
WHPC 90.3, the radio voice of Nassau Community College, is looking for individuals, businesses, charities, or organizations in our local and global community that would like to donate to support our radio station. Whether you listen locally or online, here is how it works. Go to our webpage at ncc.edu/WHPC and click Donate Now. Or if you prefer, you can send a check to WHPC Radio, 1 Education Drive, Garden City, New York, 11530. Make check payable to the NCC Foundation. In the memo of your check, write WHPC Donate Now. Any contributions will help defray our operating costs, and it's tax deductible. This message was brought to you by the radio voice of Nassau Community College, streaming online at ncc.edu/WHPC.
All right, then. So where were we? Of course, you're listening to WHPC 90.3 FM in Garden City, New York, coming to you from Nassau Community College. The show is American Hit Radio. We call it How Music Changed on Friday because we're discussing specific topics, usually in great depth for a very, very, very long amount of time, an excessive number of shows in some cases. I hope not excessive. I hope that the topics more or less deserve the coverage that we give them. I think Stax Records is holding up fine under these shows. I think this is incredibly educational for me. I learn as I go along because I know more about Stax now than I ever otherwise might have. And of course, like when we did Motown, that was like 70 shows for Motown. That was crazy. Stax was not going quite as deep.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
But I think we're going to hit at least 25, if not, you know, between 25 and 30 shows with Stax before we're done. This happens to be number 17. And that's where we are right now, covering Stax. At this point in time, we're at the latter half of the year 1970. And we had heard Mavis Staples earlier. Well, here she is with her family. There was a slight change around this time. Purvis Staples wanted to take a leave of absence. He was singing with the band up until this point, her brother. And he decided that he wanted to basically become a manager and a producer and a songwriter. Became some success at that also, by mostly with the Emotions. He started working with the Emotions and started to do quite well on his own. But the band needed to bring in somebody, so they brought in Sister Yvonne, who previously had just been the band's manager. She did not feel comfortable at first joining the band. She was more than happy to be in the background, which more or less was fine because Mavis was firmly ensconced in her position at the front of the group. Anyway, here they are with their song from the second part of 1970. This is the Staple Singers with Brand New Day.
Started up in the bigger cities and it spread to the smaller towns. The people said the boy left home naked this morning. All it took was a TV set. Then the sister picked up the extension and she said he's just doing his thing. And the father hung up on the mother and the children. We've got to fight for what we believe in. Something's in the air.
It's a brand new day.
Staple Singers inching themselves closer and closer to that classic sound. You can almost taste
that
track.
Yeah, totally.
You know? It's like, oh, they're getting there. It's happening, but not quite yet. Not quite ready for prime time, so to speak, the pop charts, but doing a good job nonetheless. One of the newcomers at the label, a girl named Margie Joseph, who there's no doubt in my mind that they basically were trying to set her up as like their version of an Aretha Franklin sort of a vocalist. And she did a great job, too. I think that a great singer. No real luck on the pop charts again, though. It makes you think that, again, and I'm thinking this is because the label was too busy putting all of its eggs in that one basket. Isaac Hayes is the guy.
He's got the basket. They didn't even want his basket at first.
Right, right. It just the way that it worked out. But when it happened, when he hit, it became his. But meanwhile, here is Margie Joseph with a fabulous song. Like I said, very Aretha Franklin. Tell me what you think. It's called Sweeter Tomorrow.
From the factory. sweeter tomorrow.
I don't know if you would agree with my assessment at the beginning of the show, but you hear how the label is like so much making products that are ideal for their times, right? All these songs, they sound like great 70s hit singles.
Absolutely.
Except they weren't hits.
Yeah, well, that one was a little bit light.
Yeah,
that was Aretha light for sure.
Yeah, well, that was maybe what the real problem was, is that there were other artists who were really doing what Stax was attempting to make their artists do. So these slots were already filled, really,
right,
in a lot of ways. So it was trying to find something new for these people, which is what was not happening, except for Isaac Hayes, who had discovered that whole, I can talk into a microphone really slow and sexy for 18 minutes sort of a thing. Very
That's
unique
right.
idea. Eddie Floyd was another veteran at the label who was holding on, put out a single in late 1970. And he was lamenting the changes as well. He said, his quote is, you know, when Booker T and the MGs were there, man, that was home. They didn't have nowhere else to go, so they would always be there and you could cut something. But once those guys were gone, you had to assign somebody to come in and cut. It just felt different. That's part of the problem. Well, the song
dry.
That he cut was this track called The Best Years of My Life. And listen to the words on this song. Just cracked me up when I was playing this the other day. Eddie Floyd with The Best Years of My Life.
Oh, I feel so good. My wife is filled with joy, 'cause we've been expecting and we hope a baby boy that looks just like me.
To me, girl.
What you're giving to me? You're giving to me now. Giving to me the best years of my life. Like a honeysuckle on a vine, your love gets better to me all the time. Every day I think about it, just blow my mind. Never let a day go by.
Given
to me,
girl,
given
to me,
the best years of my life. Like a bluebird in the tree, baby, I'm feeling fancy free. So keep on bringing good old love to me now. Every time I'm feeling down, I never have to stop and look around. Cause I know, pretty baby, you're right here by my side. Oh, 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 giving to me.
Oh, you're giving to me.
You're giving to me, girl.
Giving to me, girl.
Yeah, yeah.
The best gift of my life.
Oh, yeah. That's what you did, baby, yeah. Ha, shocked it to me one time. Went on to do it to me two times. Then you gave it to me three times. And a blessed day has come. My wife gave birth to a baby son, but somehow you just don't look like me. But that's all right, 'cause you're giving to me.
What you giving
to me? Oh, yeah.
What you giving to me?
That's what you did.
Woo! The best years of my life.
Everybody
Is that not one of the weirder?
That was a surprise ending.
First time around, I had to go back and play it again. I was like, what?
Did he really say that?
It's so weird.
Well, he doesn't seem to mind much.
Like the happiest guy in the world, and all of a sudden it seems like it's about infidelity, but it's like, it's still cool. You know?
I'm still having a good time with you.
Wow.
Well, some people don't care about that kind of stuff.
Now, the guy who was making a career out of that kind of stuff at the label was Johnny Taylor. Johnny Taylor was singing all sorts of sexy songs about, you know, doing right, doing wrong, and everything else. He always had a way of basically, you know, getting that aspect of it into the song. And Don Davis was the guy who was trying to basically keep Johnny Taylor going. Now, he was having a regular run of hits. He was one of the artists at this era who really had no trouble at all getting on the chart. This song as well. This was a number 4 R&B pop hit. Not just top 10, all the way up to number 4. Even made the pop charts at number 39. This wasn't that unusual. What was unusual is that because Don Davis was like sort of persona non grata at Stax, because the old guard was still kind of like resenting him.
Oh, yeah.
He just said he could, and this is what changed the sound so much. He was recording his stuff everywhere else but in Memphis. So this song was recorded right in the backyard of Motown. It was recorded in Detroit, Michigan. Here's Johnny Taylor with I Am Somebody.
Somebody, somebody,
oh,
Johnny Taylor working up a sweat on that one.
Get a little political there.
A little bit. Yeah, it's not as much of a sex-based song as what he was probably, I guess, you know, pretty much the stereotype thing that he was doing at that time. Speaking of Detroit, though, as we were, this next act is called the Temprees. I think that they were from the area. I don't think that they were from Detroit, but they certainly sound like they're trying to cop a sound from a Detroit act. This is their debut single. I think I just mentioned that, but they sound to me like they're sort of like trying to riff off of the Jackson 5, who were just beginning to become very famous around this point in time. This is around the time period of I Want You Back and ABC. That's what's hitting the pop charts from Detroit, so it only makes sense that Stax would be trying to get a piece of that. So here's the Temprees doing a song called Follow Her Rules and Regulations. I mean, very, very, very Jackson 5-like, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's even a Jermaine guy in there.
I can get behind that philosophy there.
Well, we ate up another hour. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope we helped you ease away from the end of your work week and into your weekend. I've got time for one more quick one. Something a little bit different. But since we're up in the Detroit area, we may as well end with another one of these unusual tracks that actually came from Don Davis. This is somebody that he knew, one of the instrumentalists, a keyboard player, who he knew from around the Detroit area, did a lot of work with Don Davis, who was the producer. Sort of like a jazz thing, but also like jazzy funk. It's kind of cool. It's a bit long for a single, but not too much so. I think it's a good way to end the show. So let's hear from Rudy Robinson and the Hungry Five with the track called Got It Together, Parts 1 and 2. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next Wednesday.
12 noon, Word of Mouth Radio. All they do is talk about cars. Every day, they call each other on the phone, let's talk about cars. And then they get this...